There's certainly a lot of interest these days in Abraham Lincoln, his family, and that period in our country's history. And lucky for us, one of Wisconsin's best and most successful authors has provided us with a new look and a different perspective on that era. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today. Jennifer Cheverini is a New York Times best-selling Wisconsin author. She's known especially for her Elm Creek quilt series, but her most recent novel is a standalone historical tale. It's titled Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker. Always glad to have her talk with us to talk about her work. And Jennifer, thanks for coming back.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be here.
Great to have you back. You know, you've written many historical novels as part of your Elm Creek quilt series, but this is a standalone one, kind of, isn't it?
Well, that's true. And it was a story that I was inspired to tell, but there's really no way to rationally try to fit it within the Elm Creek quilt series. Yeah. So I was very happy that my publisher was willing to let me step aside from the series for a book and put this story out.
And it's a great story. I'm telling you, I really enjoyed reading it, and I learned an awful lot. Because, again, this is a novel, but it's based a lot on some really good, great research that you did.
Oh, absolutely. I always start here at the Wisconsin Historical Society, not very far from where we're seated right now. And it's funny, I actually stumbled across the story of Elizabeth Keckley when I was researching some of my Elm Creek Quilts novels. I have written historical fiction set during the Civil War era before, and when I was researching some Civil War era quilts from one of my earlier books, I came across this photograph of this really astonishing masterpiece of the form. One thing that intrigued me the most was that it seemed to bridge the styles of the Civil War era with some of the later 19th century crazy quilting techniques that were just about to become very, very popular. And even more interesting than the design itself, which had embroidery and eagles and applique in the borders and words like liberty embroidered here and there, was the caption. And that said that the quilt was attributed to a woman named Elizabeth Keckley, who had worked as Mrs. Lincoln's dressmaker when she was first lady. And the quilt was said to have been made with fabrics that had been left over from making Mrs. Lincoln's gowns.
This is a fascinating story.
Well, and you know, the provenance of the quilt isn't 100% certain, but I thought to myself, how fascinating if that is actually true. The time these two women must have spent together, the conversations and the confidences they must have shared, and then, too, what an amazing historical artifact this is. It's a veritable artistic catalog of all the fabrics that Mrs. Lincoln wore to all of these important state occasions.
It's fascinating. Eloise in Milwaukee has a comment for you, or a question. Let's go there. Eloise, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I read a review of your book in Book Page, and in there you cited the source of your work as a memoir of Keckley's, and you said you had obtained a reprint of this memoir. And I'm wondering where that's available. Is it in bookstores, or did you find it in a library, or?
Yeah, it's a good. I wanted to bring Eloise in because this is a really important part of your story.
Oh, absolutely. It wasn't long after, well, it was maybe a couple years after I first saw this quilt and I had first become intrigued by Elizabeth Keckley's story, that I was researching The Union Quilters, a more recent book. And in that book, I wanted to focus. There was one chapter where I needed to focus quite closely on how President Lincoln spent his day when he went to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, to deliver his now famous address. And as I was doing that research into a lot of secondary sources, I realized that many of them were citing the same primary document. Mm-hmm. And there was that name again, Elizabeth Keckley. She had published a memoir in 1868 called Behind the Scenes. And in this book, it's a slim volume, but in it she discusses not only her time in slavery and how she managed to attain her freedom and that of her son, but also she writes down a lot of her reflections upon her time in the White House working for Mrs. Lincoln. And so, of course, I had to rush right out and get a copy of it. It is still in print. There's a Penguin paperback version of it, and that's the one that I found. And I sat and read it from cover to cover in one sitting. And as many of my questions that it answered about what it was like to be working in the White House and to be spending all that time not only talking with Mrs. Lincoln, but also observing the White House, the Lincoln White House, mm-hmm. from a very unique perspective. But I also had a lot of other questions, too. There's many important, significant historical events that went on in wartime Washington that Elizabeth Keckley did not include in her memoir. But these are events that I know she experienced as a resident of that city because she was there at the time. For example, how did it feel on these different occasions when it seemed that the Confederate Army was only hours away from invading a city?
Yeah.
It seems to me that as a resident of Washington, that would be certainly something that affected her. And then I also wonder, too, about all those little day-to-day details of life in wartime Washington, D.C. that she didn't include because they would have been familiar, in fact, all too familiar to her contemporary audience of 1868 who remembered the horrors and the deprivations of war all too well. I was curious about that, too. And then I also wondered, what happened after that memoir was published? Mm. Now, Elizabeth Keckley did not intend to tell a scandalous tell-all book. She wanted to write an affectionate and truthful account of the Lincolns that she knew, real people, free of the caricatures that she thought the press had presented far too much of Mrs. Lincoln in mm-hmm. particular. But unfortunately, that's not how it was
no.
taken upon as publication. So it was, my curiosity was satisfied by her memoir in many regards, but there was all these other questions and all these other issues that really did inspire me to write the book. But I certainly do encourage people to if your curiosity has been piqued, to certainly go out. You can get a copy of Behind the Scenes even today.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. You can join in, too, as we talk today with Jennifer Cheverini, author of many New York Times bestsellers, including her latest, the title Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker, a fascinating book. Finished reading it a week or two ago and really enjoyed it, read it from cover to cover, and learned a lot about Mrs. Lincoln and certainly about Elizabeth Keckley as well. But Mrs. Lincoln had a kind of a tough life in so many ways.
Oh, she absolutely did. Unfortunately, even during her era, well, I would say from her time in the White House all the way up to the present day, a lot of her coverage has been, I'd say, unfairly skewed to in the balance of the negative. She did experience a lot of trauma. She had three sons. Three of them passed away before she did. And we can never forget that her husband was murdered right before her very eyes. She also lost her mother when she was but a very young child and never truly felt welcomed in her stepmother's home. So she had these feelings of abandonment and fears for her loved ones almost all of her life. Not to mention, the whole time she was in the White House, her husband was receiving death threats. And she read some of these terrible letters that he received. So she was in a state of alarm and worry, and quite justifiably so, with none of the resources that we have today about dealing with grief and trauma.
Yeah, it had to be tough. And then, you know, the war, of course.
Absolutely.
To add to the top of it. And so many of the people within President Lincoln's cabinet were not really friendly with him, and
and certainly not with her either.
And she really took it on the chin. Well, she was. Some people would say she was extravagant.
Well, she did have erratic behavior. Some people have, accused her of, they've diagnosed all kinds of psychological conditions. The one that I hear most of the time is that she was suffering from narcissism. And, I think however, that a lot of her history has been written by her critics. And yes, she did have her issues. She was very headstrong and did not make always the wisest choices. Elizabeth Keckley loved her dearly, but she would be, you know, she would acknowledge this too. But she was very well educated. She was extremely intelligent and well read. She spoke fluent French, and she had a sharp political mind. And this was something that she had growing up and when she was a young woman in Lexington and in Springfield. And she wanted to be involved. She wanted to speak her opinions. And it was one thing to do that when she was living in the, you know, in the Wild West frontier of Illinois. But when she came to Washington, the people in the president's cabinet did not always want her to be interjecting her opinions. And that was very frustrating to her because she wanted to be included. She wanted her husband to consult with her and let her speak her mind. And more, he sequestered himself away with his cabinet. And it was very frustrating for her to be shut out.
And I think for that reason, in part, it may be that she developed such a closeness with this extraordinary woman, Elizabeth Keckley, born into slavery, became not only the stylist but close friend of the First Lady.
Oh, that's true. I'd say both women really needed each other. Mrs. Lincoln was isolated not only politically from the operations of government, which she so much wanted to be involved in, but also socially. No matter what she did, she could never quite break into the social elite of Washington, D.C. Now, of course, she had her status as First Lady, and she had the White House, and that did give her an edge. But she had a lot of social rivals within the in-crowd and never could quite find acceptance. Having fashionable attire gave her another edge, too, and that is why at first she needed Elizabeth Keckley so badly. But Elizabeth, of course, could benefit from exposure at all these important state occasions, too. So I think first they were drawn together by that mutual need, but then they did become closer. It was always an employer-employee relationship, to be sure, but a true friendship and closeness did develop as they saw each other through tragedy and loss, and as Mrs. Lincoln relied ever more upon Elizabeth Keckley for that loyalty and that support when other ladies of Washington would not quite accept her and, in fact, outright snubbed her.
Jennifer Cheverini, our guest today, author of Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker, having some fun talking with her today. You have a question or a comment. I hope you'll join in. Are you a fan of Jennifer's book? Have you heard of Elizabeth Keckley? I've got to tell you, I had not until I read the book. And she's a fascinating character. We're going to talk some more about her as well. But look forward to your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with New York Times bestselling author Jennifer Cheverini about her latest book. It's called Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker. I can highly recommend it to you. I really enjoyed it, and I'm pretty sure you will too, especially, well, for me, I knew nothing really about Mrs. Lincoln other than a few things in the, you know, that I've read in the books about the Civil War and that era. And frankly, nothing, I can't recall really reading anything that was really highly, that painted her in a great light. Let's put it that way. So it's great to have this look at her, but also Elizabeth Keckley, who was just what a fascinating woman who bought her way out of slavery.
Absolutely right. It's such a quintessentially American story to come from such humble conditions and just through hard work and perseverance rising to great heights. And of course, Elizabeth Keckley beginning her life as a slave in Virginia. I mean, that's just about as difficult as you're going to come. But so she was born in 1818, the same year Mrs. Lincoln was born. And she remained within the same household for almost four decades before she came to Washington, living in Virginia, living in North Carolina for a time, and eventually ending up in St. Louis as the family that she belonged to moved from here to there trying to make it financially. There were always, it seemed that she was, whoever her owner was, it was always someone on the verge of bankruptcy, which was not only difficult for that white family, of course, but is ever more difficult for the slaves who had to work extremely hard, not only to support them, but they knew that they were one of the family's most valuable assets and they could be sold off, never to see their families again at any time. So Elizabeth became very skilled as a dressmaker, working not only with her family, but also being hired out. It was in St. Louis where she began to do that a lot. And what that meant was that although she still belonged to that family, they would allow other families in St. Louis to pay for her services to make dresses. Of course, all of her wages would then go to the Garland family who owned her. And she just acquired a lot of independence that way. She was able to move about the city on her own, accept money and do shopping and all of that, almost as if she were a free woman. But of course she was not. But it was there that she really became most driven to get her freedom and that of her son, who was a teenager at the time. And so she kept repeatedly going back to Hugh Garland and saying, set a price. Let me know what I have to pay so that I can be free and so that my son George can be free. And he would put her off and put her off. And several times he would demand that she never bring it up again. But she would not let go. And so finally he said, $1,200, you and George can be free. That's a lot of money today.
Yeah.
It was a fortune back then, especially if you consider that Elizabeth was probably able to earn about $3 a day working on a full day's work, and all of that had to go to the Garland family. Anything that she could earn on her own outside of that full day's work, she could keep, but the time for that was extremely limited. So it seemed like an almost impossible task.
And yet she did it.
Yes, she did.
Jody in Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
So I saw Lincoln the movie. It was fantastic and so many facets of it I have questions about. But my wondering, was that her that accompanied Mrs. Lincoln in all of like the Senate hearings and such?
Well, in the movie, she is depicted at these different settings. Elizabeth Keckley does not record in her memoir whether she was there. And, of course, there were many times when the galleries were just closed to African-Americans, and they weren't even permitted to be in there at all. But, yes, the character portrayed by Gloria Rubin, portrayed brilliantly, I think, was Elizabeth Keckley. And I know it was Lincoln, not the Elizabeth Keckley story, but I do wish that we had been able to see more of her so that we would have known truly what an extraordinary woman she was. But I think that when she was there, she appeared in such absolutely critical scenes. And not only the engagement with Mrs. Lincoln, but also the conversation she had with President Lincoln, whom she greatly admired. She says in her memoir that she revered him almost as a demigod. So her respect and admiration for him was very keen, although she did wish that he had come along a little bit more quickly on matters of abolition.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate it, Jody. Let's turn to Jack next in Eagle River. Jack, hi to you. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. Hi. A frozen day to you, too.
Yes.
I just wanted to ask, the previous caller took some of my question. I wanted to ask if you saw Lincoln, and second, what you thought of Sally Field's performance. And one other brief comment after you answer this.
Yes, I think I have seen the film. Of course, I paid the most attention when Elizabeth Keckley was on the screen. I admit I sat up on the edge of my chair whenever Gloria Rubin came into the frame. I think that Sally Field did a wonderful job portraying Mrs. Lincoln, and I appreciated the job that the writers did, as well as what Sally Field did in her performance, in bringing out that more balanced portrayal of Mrs. Lincoln. Unfortunately, too many depictions of Mrs. Lincoln tend to veer into the caricature that she was hysterical and this this conniving shrew who made President Lincoln's life absolutely miserable. And that is not the woman that Elizabeth Keckley knew, and that was not the woman that she portrayed in her memoir. And I like that this more nuanced version of Mrs. Lincoln was brought to the screen. And I think that might be in part because the book that helped inform the movie, Team of Rivals, also drew upon Elizabeth Keckley's 1868 memoir. So I credit that for having some influence into this more equitable portrayal of Mrs. Lincoln.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks. Jack, and you had a follow-up?
Well, yeah, I did. In either Geneva or Batavia, Illinois, I think it was Batavia, there's a place where Robert Lincoln apparently had her confined in her later years for several months. And, of course, these friends of mine, whenever we visit down there, they have to show us where Mrs. Lincoln was confined. I don't know what kind of a place it was, but do you have anything on that?
Yes, it's true that later in her life, Robert Lincoln did have his mother committed to a sanatorium, and there was some thought that she had attempted suicide. She was planning a suicide. She certainly did have erratic behavior leading up to that point. And there was some folks said that she had tried to commit suicide by going to buy a bottle of laudanum, but the quick-thinking pharmacist substituted a solution of burnt sugar and water instead. She always protested that she had no such plans in mind, but Robert Lincoln prevailed, and she was committed for a time. And it was a very difficult period for her, but she did manage to, with the help of some friends who advocated for her, she did manage to persuade them that she had been restored to reason and could be released. And she was released to the custody of her sister and allowed to return to Springfield.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, Jack. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way, if question or comment, as we talk with Jennifer Chavarini about her book, Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker, visiting with her about Mrs. Lincoln, of course, and the former slave, Elizabeth Keckley, who was with her for a long, long time, made her dresses and was really a friend to her for many, many years. You used the term modiste.
Yes.
And I think that's the – is that the correct pronunciation?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That term comes up a lot in the book. What is that? What's the literal meaning of that?
So. Well, I translated it into the 21st century as her stylist. Of course, that is not a term that they would have used back in the 19th century. But Elizabeth Keckley had a lot of responsibilities, a lot of professional responsibilities, in addition to designing these gorgeous gowns, these elaborate creations, and collaborating with Mrs. Lincoln on these designs. She sewed the dresses. She handled a lot of the purchases on her own, picking trims and laces and accessories. But she also dressed Mrs. Lincoln for these formal occasions, styled her hair, assisted her with her gloves, adjusted her flowers and bouquets. And as she said in an interview when she was quite an elderly woman, her hands were the last to touch Mrs. Lincoln before she took the president's arm and he led her off to some reception or ball or important occasion. But she was so much more than that, too, to the family. As they became more comfortable with her, as they all became better acquainted, she actually handled some of those same issues for Mr. Lincoln, too. Mm-hmm. His hair, we've seen the photographs. It was, it was a challenge to work with. And Mrs. Lincoln would scold him and said his hair would not be quite so unkempt if he didn't have that habit of running his fingers through it. But he would ask Mrs. Keckley to take care of his hair as well, always in a fond way. He called her Madam Elizabeth. And so he would say, "Well, Madam Elizabeth, do you want to try to brush down my bristles today?" And she would say, "Certainly, Mr. President, take care of that too." But because of her experience nursing people within the family from her years as a slave, she also had experience taking care of children and nursing the ill. So she also stepped into this very intimate role within the Lincoln family as well. So they knew they could count on her. They trusted her very much. And not only for these professional duties she performed, but also just her calming presence, her poise, and her good sense. They trusted her thoughts as well and her ideas.
Sure. The cover of your book it's a great cover of the two of them. You're not seeing their faces. And I was looking at the styles of the dresses, which I thought was kind of interesting. What were the popular styles of the time?
Well, there's what was popular, and then there was rather what Mrs. Lincoln preferred. Of course, the styles we're familiar with, the very tight bodice, as Elizabeth Keckley said, it's supposed to fit like wallpaper. And then the very elaborate, very full skirts held up by hoops. Sometimes the skirts alone could take 25 yards of fabric. So it was very elaborate, very costly. And as Mrs. Lincoln said, perhaps in a way to defend her spending, she must dress in costly materials. Everyone expects it. She must be dressed to the absolute finest. And so these required very specific sewing skills. You had to be able to use a certain stitch to get the bodice to fit exactly right. And then you had to have a different kind of looser stitch so that the skirt would fall and wouldn't pucker over all of those hoops. So it took a dressmaker of extraordinary talent and diligence to be able to fashion these dresses to fit exactly the way they should.
I thought it was interesting, and I'm sure this is a true part that actually happened, that Mrs. Lincoln would go off for the summer or be out of town, and then other ladies who really coveted Elizabeth Keckley's work would, you know, just rush in.
Well, absolutely. Well, that's true. Everyone knew that she was Mrs. Lincoln had to come first. And so they got their orders in when they could. And, you know, Elizabeth was about satisfying her customers. That's what a good stylist would do, while, of course, guiding them to better taste and fashion. And Mrs. Lincoln, by all descriptions, had a very beautiful neck and shoulders. They were her best features, and she was quite proud of them. So she liked to wear low-cut gowns that really showed off those features. And if you see photographs of Mrs. Lincoln, you will see that they are almost always off the shoulder. And she did take some criticism in the press and amongst the gossip of Washington. Mm-hmm. And she was criticized for wearing gowns that were really much more suitable for a far younger woman. But Mrs. Lincoln did not let that dissuade her from wearing the styles that she thought were most becoming to her.
Well, what you have on your cover, you sort of her back and neck are shown to good, good effect of the person who's actually posing.
Yes, for the model that is appearing in the photograph. Yes, that is not a vintage photograph of Mrs. Lincoln.
Oh, Jennifer Cheverini, our guest, author of Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker, and great to have her on. Elizabeth Keckley was such an interesting woman or person. She founded the Contraband Relief Association. That's another very interesting sidelight to this whole story, this whole novel.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that just emphasizes how she had this rich, full, very involved life, even apart from her association with the Lincolns. It's because she was associated with the Lincolns that she was able to publish her memoir, and that's why we remember her today. But she was an astonishing and accomplished woman, even outside of that. When while the war was going on, newly freed slaves began to walk off the plantation and determined to make new lives for themselves. And they flooded Washington, D.C. by the thousands, usually without shoes, with no food, with no money, with barely the clothes on their back, and very ill prepared for new lives as free citizens. And they came to Washington and they set up in these squalid refugee camps. Sometimes they built shacks for themselves in the alleyways of the city out of whatever pieces of wood that they could find. And Elizabeth Keckley was very moved by their plight. She always felt that as someone who had been blessed enough to acquire her freedom, she had a special responsibility to take the hand of other people who were still in slavery and bring them up to where she was, to bring them into freedom herself. And so she decided to mobilize the African-American community of Washington, D.C., because there was a thriving community of free African-Americans that were doing very well, had their own social circles, their own businesses, their own churches. And she wanted to mobilize them to raise money to help with not only immediate needs, food, mm-hmm. clothing, shelter, health issues, but she also wanted to help all of these thousands of people to receive training and skills that they would need for lives in a free society. So she set about making sure they were educated in job training skills, how to find work, how to negotiate a wage, and something that was really quite a revelation for these newly freed slaves, how to leave an employer when you're not being treated fairly. So those were important. And then focusing on the women in the camps as well, she taught literacy and sewing, not only so that they could provide clothing and other necessary items for their own families, but also so that a talented few she could take on as apprentices and give them additional training so that, like herself, they could set themselves up in business as dressmakers. So in this way, we see that she had a profound and, I think, immeasurable legacy.
Unbelievable.
Because for every person she helped, not only did she help that individual, but they went on to be able to help their families. And so each generation was able to get a little step up. And so she had a profound effect on all of these freed slaves who came to Washington by virtue of this wonderful organization she created.
That was just unbelievable. Karen in Cottage Grove, thank you for joining us. Hello.
Hello. The book sounds fascinating, and I'm really looking forward to reading it. I wanted to say that there is a book for younger people who might be interested in the subject of Mary Todd Lincoln and Elizabeth Keckley, titled Unlikely Friendship by Anne Rinaldi, R-I-N-A-L-D-I. And it's probably the level of like late elementary school through middle school, mm-hmm. although, you know, obviously anyone might enjoy reading it. And Anne Rinaldi is a historical fiction writer that writes quite a bit.
Well, thanks for calling, Karen. I honestly think your book would be very suitable for young readers, fairly young readers.
Well, of course, parents, I think, should be encouraged to judge their maturity of their own child and maybe take a look at the book first. But certainly, I think that, you know, young adult readers, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely, young adults. And Karen, thank you. Appreciate it very much. You know, one thing we really didn't get into, and Joe in Prairie du Chien wondered how Elizabeth went from buying her freedom to that position that she held within the White House. And, of course, you tell that so very well in the book. But
well, she first was able to acquire that significant sum of money through the kindness and generosity of her patrons in St. Louis. When they realized that she was struggling and working herself almost to the brink of physical and emotional collapse, trying to get together this sum, her favorite clients pooled their resources and came up with a $1,200 so that Elizabeth and her son George could be free. And once that was taken care of, Elizabeth could work for herself. She no longer had to work all day long and give her money to the Garlands. She could work for her own upkeep and the care of herself and her child. And she never considered that money anything more than a loan. She was determined to pay them back, and so she did. And it was after that that she made her way first to Baltimore very briefly and then onto the greener pastures of Washington, D.C. When she got there, she Had some recommendations from her lady patrons in St. Louis, and that helped her. She started out working as an assistant seamstress, but before long, she went on her own. She had a sign made, and she set it up, and she began working for one client and then another, building a reputation for herself. Some of her best clients were the wives of Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis.
Yeah.
And it was just by satisfying one client after another that she acquired this great reputation. And after Mrs. Lincoln came to town, she needed a dressmaker. You know, she had brought some dresses with her from the frontier of Illinois, mm-hmm. but she needed to have styles suitable for Washington, D.C. And so she had a number of friends, a number of acquaintances, recommend their dressmakers to her. And after interviewing several, Elizabeth was the one that she chose. After seeing how Elizabeth handled one quick test, one test of her skills, she gave Elizabeth a dress she had brought with her that needed alterations. And after seeing how well Elizabeth did with that, she had the job and was the only dressmaker Mrs. Lincoln employed while she was First Lady. She had other seamstresses to handle the day-to-day simple sewing, but Elizabeth was her special modiste.
And it was and so interesting that she made dresses not only for Mrs. Lincoln, but for Mrs. Jefferson Davis and Mrs. Robert E. Lee.
Absolutely. In fact, when Verena Davis was leaving Washington, when the nation was fracturing, it seemed that her husband was going to leave the Senate and they were going to go back south, she actually was so pleased with Elizabeth Keckley that she invited Elizabeth to come south with her. Now, Elizabeth found this very flattering and promised to give it due consideration. But ultimately, she realized that as a freed slave and as an African-American woman, she was better off casting her lot with the North than following the First Lady of the Confederacy to be into the South.
Oh, it's such a fascinating story. And the selling going well?
I'm pleased to say that it is doing very well. The reception has been very warm. And I found out that it is Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker is going to debut at number 6 on the New York Times bestseller list. So that was quite a thrill, I'm sure you can imagine. That was a lovely phone call, getting that news.
Had to be a great phone call. And it's always a pleasure, Jennifer. I know you're working on other books. We'll have a chance to talk again. So what's your next book?
Well, my next book, I'm going to be moving from Washington, D.C., the capital of the Union, to Richmond, Virginia, the capital of the Confederacy, to focus on another Elizabeth with a fascinating Civil War story, Elizabeth Van Loo, who, although she was a native Richmonder and a very proud Virginian, was a Union loyalist. And she became the head of the most successful spy network in Richmond, Virginia during the time. And also, if your listeners are interested in talking to me more about Mrs.
Tonight
Lincoln's Dressmaker, that's right, I'll be wrapping up the book tour with a visit to the Racine Public Library. I'll be there at 6:30 tonight, and I'm eager to hear more questions about not only the Lincolns, but also Elizabeth Keckley, who was truly an amazing historical figure, and I am very grateful that she left her memoir behind so that I could discover her story and future generations would know what a contribution she made.
Well, you've done a marvelous job, and it's tonight at...
Tonight, 6:30 p.m. at the Racine Public Library.
Racine Public Library, and I think we have that posted up on my Facebook page as well. Jennifer, always a pleasure. We'll look forward to your next book. It sounds exciting as well.
Oh, thank you. It was great being here.
Jennifer Chiaverini, New York Times bestselling author, known especially for her Elm Creek quilt series, but this latest novel, Standalone, Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker, fabulous book, a fascinating book, and I hope you have a chance to read it. We're going to move from the Civil War to the present and talk about Apple computers coming up next. There's always something coming up new with Mac specialist Joe Rhodes, and he'll be helping us understand what's going on out there with Macs next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.